In the early evening on October 1st, 2003, Christina Crosby was 3 miles into a 17-mile bicycle ride, intent on reaching her goal of 1,000 miles for the riding season. She was a respected senior professor of English who had celebrated her 50th birthday a month before. As she crested a hill, she caught a branch in the spoke of her bicycle, which instantly pitched her to the pavement. Her chin took the full force of the blow and her head snapped back. In that instant, she was paralyzed. In her new book, A Body Undone, Christina Crosby puts into words a broken body that seems beyond the reach of language and understanding. She writes about a body shot through with neurological pain, disoriented in time and space, incapacitated by paralysis and deadened sensation. Crosby is professor of English and feminist gender and sexuality studies at Wesleyan University. Again, the name of the book is A Body Undone, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Christina, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
I appreciate your having me on your show.
What is the story that you wanted to tell about the accident, about being a quadriplegic at the age of 50? At what point, since this accident happened in 2003, at what point did you think that you wanted to write about it and share the experience?
Well, it was really a gathering of grief in my life after my brother Jeff died in January of 2010. And I had been working on an essay in Victorian studies, which is my scholarly area, but found that I simply couldn't stay with it. And I began writing in the first person without saying to myself, now I am writing a memoir. But I began writing about pain because pain is so difficult to describe. And I suffer from chronic neurological pain. So the first impulse, I believe, was to address pain, and it was both the pain in my body and the pain in my heart over my loss of my brother, and shortly before him, my mother, who was elderly. And before that, the loss of a whole way of life and a whole set of physical capacities that I needed to mourn.
On the front jacket of the book, it says, deeply unsentimental, Crosby communicates in unflinching prose the experience of diving into the wreck of her body to acknowledge grief and loss. I must say, when I read the book, I didn't get that sense of being unsentimental, but I guess it is accurate. Were you aiming for that, or is that just your natural tone?
Well, I think that sentimentality can be a kind of a trap because it allows us to feel pity or, yes, pity largely, allows us to feel pity without necessarily having any deep engagement. So I didn't want to write a sentimental book, and I didn't want to write a book that had the usual arc of inspirational narration ending in, you know, adjustment and happiness, because life is more complicated than that.
When you decided to tell the story, and as you say, it was this gathering of grief that came together, are there questions that you wanted to answer? Were there things that you wanted to explore for you?
Yes, I do think that there were questions. One was simply, could I represent to myself the body-mind that I was now and the world that I am living in now, which is so different from what I had experienced before? I needed to know whether I could use language to address that world and to think through how it was that I came to be who I am now. That's really what I think in the end is the project of the book, is a very simple one of, in the book I say I needed to make something of an otherwise confounded life. So I have it, my resource is language and literature, because that's what I have worked on my entire life.
You write in the book that only through writing have I arrived at the life I now lead, the body I am now. So how much of you is that body?
Well, I was just using the neologism body-mind, all one word, to represent what I believe is a simple truth, which is that, yes, body and mind are separate. And yes, it's impossible to separate body and mind. It's a kind of contradiction that has vexed philosophers for a long time. And phenomenology, which is a kind of philosophy, teaches us that we become who we are in our interactions with the perceptual world around us through our relations with objects and our relations with others. And that makes sense to me. So I think I was writing to represent this life and to figure out how it was that the person who I was long ago as a child or a young adult matters to the person that I now am, because there really is a through line. I'm the same person, but then there's this radical break. So how to account for both of those things?
The subtitle of the book being Living On After Great Pain. And in your writing about the pain, you talk about the loneliness associated with that pain, the terror associated with that pain. Why are those two so inevitably linked?
Well, the terror for me was largely in the hospital when the pain was not very well controlled by any drugs, and I was just quite terrified by the way in which it could overwhelm me. And when I came home, my central nervous system very slowly settled down a bit, and that pain is now moderated by drugs. Drugs never make it go away, but it's moderated by drugs. I think that I was terrified by the pain because it was so uncontrollable when I first experienced it. I find it lonely because it's impossible for another person to know that I'm in pain. They look at me, they see that I'm in a wheelchair, they see the physical deficits, but they don't see the pain. And it's impossible to describe pain. You can try to quantify it on the scale of 0 to 10, which is what happens when you go to see your doctor and you're asked to rate your pain when your pulse is taken. But it's impossible to describe pain except through metaphor. And the metaphor that I found for how it felt in the hospital was a neoprene wetsuit where the current was running through my body right between my skin and the wetsuit, as it were, that layer of water that the wetsuit warms, which allows you to be in cold water without being too cold. It felt that sort of moist place was electrified, and that's a strange metaphor to talk about my skin as a wetsuit.
Mm. Your partner, Janet, does take exception to that notion that you suffer alone. Do you understand her thoughts on that?
Yes, I do. She read a draft of the chapter that I wrote on pain and objected to the notion that I suffer alone, because sure, she cannot see my pain, and I find myself, searching for words and describing it to her. But she is so sorry that I am in pain. It pains her that I'm in pain, and that's simply a truth. It also is true that the pain separates me in a way from the world, because sometimes I just feel abstracted by it, that I'm taken into my body and away from the relational world, which is the space of life. But I come back. I come back because, as I say, the drugs control the pain, and I'm very grateful that I'm able to work so that when I'm preparing for class or teaching class or reading a book, I'm taken out of myself. And that's what I need to have. I need to be taken out of myself, like conversation or by reading, by watching something, just not thinking about myself and reflecting on the pain. When the pain intrudes, then I find it hard to be fully present.
Yes, let's talk about the work. You are a professor of English and feminist gender and sexuality studies at Wesleyan University. How do you think the accident impacted, if at all, your work? Do you think you are a different professor now than you were before the accident?
Yes, I do. I certainly do think that. Living as I do, I've become quite interested in the field of disability studies, which has been around for about 30 years now. So there's a very well-developed body of work that I'm slowly acquainting myself with. And I have a very different relationship to the university. When I broke my neck, I was the chair of the faculty. I had just chaired the first faculty meeting of the year, which is the festive one. It's the happy faculty meeting because it's where newly hired colleagues are introduced. And so everybody knew who I was. And I was actively aware of institutional developments, and I was working at an institutional level at Wesleyan. I'm no longer able to do that. And it's a real loss for me. But I know my limits, and my limits are I don't go to meetings that involve the entire university, like those faculty meetings. I don't go to strategy sessions about the future. I go to my department meetings. I go to my program meetings for feminist gender and sexuality studies. And there I have continued my work, I think, not as I had done so before, but I think that in the classroom, I'm close to being the same person in that I bring my ability to attend to what students are saying, which I think is what makes us a good teacher. And that is unhurt. So yes and no is the answer to my working life. It's both the same and quite different.
Mm. Ultimately, what do you hope readers get out of your writing and your story?
I hope that readers are able to reflect on the ways in which their own lives depend on others. I believe that we do not live our lives alone. We are social creatures, and for our very being, we depend on one another. That dependence is not, I think, often acknowledged because we have such a strong emphasis on being autonomous and being an individual. Yes, I am an autonomous individual who acts to get things done the way I want them to have done, but I'm also dependent, quite dependent, for help with bodily functions. And it's just a reminder that we all could easily have the sorts of needs that I have, which simply emphasize the ways in which we depend on each other. So I would like people to think more about human interdependency and also about the work of caring labor, to think self-consciously about how it is that we care for each other.
The name of the book is A Body Undone, Living On After Great Pain. It is published by NYU Press. Christina Crosby, thank you very much for speaking to us, and best of luck with the book.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it, Joe.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Christina Crosby is the author of A Body Undone. It's published by NYU Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.